was the last time you fell truly in love with your wife? When was the last time you felt awed by the world around you? Do you want to explore and take risks, but feel held back by a need for security or familiarity? According to the 2015 Gallup poll of U.S. employee engagement, approximately 70% of employees are either not engaged or actively disengaged. So if you long for deeper relationships, a greater sense of personal fulfillment, and a more vibrant life, you need to discover or rediscover your passion, says our next guest. Journalist Greg Lavoie's new book is Vital Signs, The Nature and Nurture of Passion, which he says can help discover what inspires passion, what defeats it, how you lose it, and how you get it back. Again, the name of the book is Vital Signs, Discovering and Sustaining Your Passion for Life. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Greg Lavoie to the roundtable this morning. Greg, thank you very much for being with us. Nice to have you back on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What brought you to the subject of passion?
Let's see. I ran across years ago an Italian writer named Alberto Moravi. He said it's important in life to pursue the one problem you were born to understand. And for some reason or another, this is one of mine, is how people create a life that really belongs to them and isn't a knockoff, and how they sustain their passion for the game all the way through. I think that's just been one of my fascinations.
So let us begin with a baseline. How do you define passion?
I would suspect probably the way most people do. Spark, mojo, life force, vitality, get up and go. It's and I don't mean to sound melodramatic about this, but I also think of it as a survival mechanism, frankly. Very much a matter of, I think, health and well-being, because my sense is that your attachment to life depends on your interest in it, just your basic sense of enthusiasm, curiosity, reverence, gratitude, participation, all that. And I also think of it, the passion, as a skill. In other words, not so much a place you get to, but a place you come from.
The first part of what you just said, I find fascinating, and I found fascinating in the book, because you talk about how it is very important for us to look within, to inspect our dispassion as well. That we must look at ourselves when we are depressed or bored or stuck or numb for some reason, of why don't we have that passion? Why is that passion lacking?
Yeah, I think that's one of the critical questions, just in starting to get it back to whatever degree you feel like you've lost it, is identify where you've lost it. You know, it's like leaving the house and not having your car keys. It's like, where's the most likely place I would have left that thing? You know, it's kind of like that. You identify places where it drains out of your life. And it does drain. I mean, that's the nature of passion. It comes and goes. I remember years ago coming up with a list of activities that I was engaged in at that time that they kind of pulled siphoned energy out of me. And I remember socializing out of guilt was on the list. I remember driving in rush hour traffic when I didn't need to be, doing my own taxes instead of farming it out, letting myself get trapped in conversations with talkaholics. I mean, there's lots of ways that life can just kind of pull it away from you, and I think it's good to identify where you're losing it. I mean, is it a job that sucks the life out of you? That's something to look at. Is it relationships that, you kind of feel like a ghost of your full self? Is it not having any life goals you feel any passion for? I mean, I think it's just good to identify.
And you are here to tell us that it is not a case of you either have it or you don't. It is something that can be turned on as well as off.
Yeah, that's my sense. This is, I think, not one from the either you've got it or you don't department. You know, some people are passionate, some just aren't. I don't really think that's the case any more than, you know, sometimes I hear people say, I don't dream. I'm just one of those people, I don't dream. And
yeah.
I mean, science tells us that everybody does, and typically half a dozen times a night. I think it's the same with passion. You know, and I think that cultivating it happens best at the level of the moment, the gesture, the decision, not the 5-year plan, not the extreme makeover. So these are things that we can do in little switches that we can flick on throughout any given day. You know, get a little more novelty into your day. Get up on the other side of the bed than the one you always get up on. Sit at a different side of the table than the one you always sit at. You know, there's lots of little ways that we can bring a little bit of adventure, I suppose I could say, into our days.
Keeping passion alive. We hear that phrase a lot. How to keep the passion alive. Whether we're talking about relationships or business or leadership or education or anything, how we keep that passion alive. But as you point out, it really is in the nature of passion for it to fade in and fade out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the nature of nature to fade in and fade out. The law of entropy pretty much tells us that systems have a tendency to lose energy over time, unless, of course, you pump more energy into the system. You know, in other words, just at a really basic level, a cup of coffee is going to cool down unless you reheat it. You know, a clock is going to wind down unless you keep rewinding it. And it's important to understand that this is the nature of the thing, is to fade. People are so devastated in relationships, for instance, when the passion, you know, goes the way of the dodo bird, but that's kind of how it happens. And we need to work at it a little. It takes a little vigilance, takes a little diligence to keep it stabilized.
When you were researching this, what surprised you about what we know and what we don't know about passion?
Well, that's an interesting question. What surprised me? I guess one of the things that just surprised me is how readily people are willing, and I include myself in this, how readily people are willing to just settle for less, continually choose security over passion. I think that's really one of the dynamics I saw and I see the most often, is the sort of tug of war between passion and security. I was surprised how often security wins out and passion gets backburnered or sidelined. And that explains a lot about where people find themselves in their lives, like you said, in any arena, whether it's relational, vocational, creative, even spiritual, I suppose, is, you know, I met a young fellow out in California who came up to me and he said his whole life he's wanted to be a teacher and a speaker. He spent years and years, he said, biting my tongue. And while I'm talking to him, I notice he's got this really pronounced scar, like a big callus, right on the tip of his tongue, from where I'm guessing he just apparently had bitten it repeatedly for years. And it's just like, I saw that and I thought, wow, there's so many ways people find to bite their tongues and hold themselves back and keep themselves in the safety security zone. And I guess in some way I was surprised at how readily we'll just go for the secure rather than the adventure.
So let's ask the obvious question of how you see that we balance the two, that we can balance the desire for passion with the desire for security.
Yeah, and again, I think it's just a matter of looking at where you are in your life and how you feel about living, you know, and being yourself. And are you bored? Are you restless? Do you have a sense that there are things lacking? And I just think acknowledging that is part of the work to be done. And balancing out is finding lots of little choice points in any given day or week that'll take you either toward or away from just a basic sense of being alive and being engaged. And, you know, taking steps and then looking at the feedback your life gives you. I mean, I just think it's important to kind of establish a little bit of a call and response conversation with yourself where you take a step toward doing something a little different than you always do it, for instance. order something other than your usual at the restaurant, and just kind of afterwards see, oh, so how did that feel? Order, you know, buy something you've never bought at the grocery store when you go. Rearrange a piece of furniture in your house. When somebody asks you how you're doing, tell them how you're really doing. And just kind of note afterwards, so how did that feel to do that? Do I feel expanded or contracted, better or worse? And I think it's just kind of striking up this kind of conversation with yourself.
I remember back to my mother, who is passed, but when she was younger and was just going through the whole grandchildren thing as the young kids were coming into our lives and for my brothers, and a five-year-old or a six-year-old kid would say, "I'm bored." And my mother used to look at them and say, "How can a five-year-old be bored? You have everything is new and everything is exciting." Have we reached that point where we're allowing kids to be bored and losing that excitement and the wide-eyed nature of childhood?
Yeah, frankly, I do. I mean, I read a book, what was it? This guy was talking about something he called nature deficit disorder. And he interviews a fourth grade kid, and the kid says, "Oh, I like being indoors better because that's where all the electric outlets are."
Right. Richard Louv.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like there's something right in there that tells us a lot about what's happening to kids. But I've also heard, you know, this idea of kids coming to you saying, "I'm bored," and helping them try to kind of brainstorm things to do often doesn't work. I had one parent say, the trick really is pull the kid up into your lap for 5 minutes. Just give them a nice little dose of attention, and then they usually get kind of recharged, and then they're on their merry rampant way. But there's something about giving yourself, even when you're bored, a little just focused attention rather than trying to distract yourself with stuff to do. Because obviously there's no end to the options in that department. I mean, we live in a culture full of weapons of mass distraction. I mean, there's tons of stuff, you know. And rather than looking around outside for that, is pull yourself up into your lap and say, so, you know, just rock yourself. You don't even have to say anything. Just say, okay, I feel bored and restless and unhappy. So there you are. And I think there's something about that for whether it's kids or adults.
Well, the book is fascinating. It's entitled Vital Signs: Discovering and Sustaining Your Passion for a Wife. It is published by Tarcher Penguin. Greg Lavoie, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, Vital Signs is the name of the book by Greg Lavoie, published by Tarcher Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.